Have you ever found yourself yearning for someone to rescue you from life's challenges? I certainly have. In my darkest moments, I've caught myself fantasizing about a knight in shining armor who would swoop in and make everything okay. This isn't just my personal weakness. It's what psychologist Colette Downing identified as the Cinderella complex in her groundbreaking 1981 bestseller that sold over 2.5 million copies worldwide. The book struck such a chord that it was translated into 23 languages and remains required reading in women's studies programs decades later. Gloria Steinem called it revolutionary, while Betty Friedan praised it as the book that finally explains why so many women feel trapped. Even Princess Diana reportedly kept a copy on her nightstand, finding in its pages an explanation for her own struggles with independence. What makes this work so enduringly powerful is its uncomfortable truth. The greatest obstacle to women's equality isn't external oppression, but an internal psychological dependency that we've been conditioned to embrace. Deep within many women lies a profound psychological dependency, a yearning to be protected and cared for that undermines our independence. Dowling discovered this truth about herself during a bout with the flu while living alone. The revelation struck her. Despite her outward competence, what she truly wanted was safety and protection. This wasn't unique to her. Thousands of women share this inability to accept full responsibility for themselves. The pattern appears repeatedly. Women who seem strong and independent suddenly retreat into dependency when given the opportunity. Dowling herself experienced this after leaving New York City for rural Rhinebeck with her three children to join a new partner. Despite having supported herself professionally for years, her ambition collapsed once sharing a home with a man again. Her writing hours disappeared, replaced by cooking elaborate meals, gardening, and homemaking, activities that felt comfortingly safe compared to facing the adult world alone. When her partner confronted her about bringing no money into the household while he supported her and her children, she felt outraged. Didn't he appreciate her domestic efforts? The truth was, she'd chosen what she called the shit work because it felt safer than professional challenges. An inner transformation had occurred. Alone, she'd managed independence, but with a man present, she'd regressed to the same dependency she'd fled her marriage to escape. This pattern isn't isolated. When Dowling published an essay about her experience, she received an overwhelming response from women across all demographics who recognized themselves in her story. A Santa Monica woman described quitting her newspaper job to freelance while relying on her husband's income, then oscillating between total guilt about my reliance on him and internal fury that he would question that right. A successful lawyer confessed to hating and fearing both dependence and independence simultaneously, constantly weighing, charging ahead against running and hiding behind some man who'll protect me. The psychological need to avoid independence, what Dowling calls the wish to be saved, may be the most important issue facing women today. Despite outward progress in education and career opportunities, many women were raised with subtle but persistent messaging to depend on men and feel fundamentally frightened without one. These dependency needs remain deeply buried in the psyche because they're frightening and uncomfortable to acknowledge, originating in early experiences of infantile helplessness and reinforced through cultural narratives. Dowling defines the Cinderella complex as a complex network of largely repressed attitudes and fears that keep women in a psychological half-light, unconsciously retreating from fully using their minds and creativity. Like the fairy tale character waiting for her prince, women today are still waiting for something external, whether it's a person, circumstance, or stroke of luck, to transform their lives rather than taking full responsibility for their own transformation. The consequences of this complex manifests in countless subtle and obvious ways. Women generally function well below their intellectual and creative capabilities, living in a kind of gender limbo of their own making. Some remain completely oblivious to their inner conflicts, others catch uncomfortable glimpses of them occasionally but quickly push them aside, while the most inspiring women face their dependency needs directly and use that awareness to generate new strength and autonomy. This psychological dependency isn't merely personal, it has profound economic and societal consequences. Despite decades of consciousness-raising efforts and feminist movements, women's economic position has actually worsened over time. In the early 1980s, women earned less than 60% of what men earned, a decline from 63% in 1956. Two-thirds of working women earned under $10,000 annually, with half having no pension plans. Even more troubling, women often self-select into lower-paying, less challenging positions. Most tellingly, unlike men, women's IQ shows almost no correlation to career achievement or economic success. The Stanford Gifted Child Study revealed a startling pattern. Two-thirds of women with genius-level IQs were working as housewives or office workers, far below their intellectual potential. Talented women frequently resist advancement opportunities, preferring instead to work as unrecognized support for powerful men. They often experience panic attacks or anxiety when faced with actual changes that would lead toward greater independence, largely because they weren't raised with the emotional tools to be assertive or self-reliant. This pattern persists across generations, education levels, and socioeconomic backgrounds, suggesting its deep psychological roots. The complex manifests in self-sabotaging behaviors, like turning down promotions, maintaining toxic relationships, or avoiding leadership roles, all while maintaining an outward appearance of competence and capability. This disconnect between potential and achievement represents one of the most persistent and damaging patterns in women's professional and personal development. Evidence increasingly suggests women actively retreat from newfound freedom and career advancement opportunities. Major manufacturers consistently report female employees showing strong resistance to advancement programs, even when specifically designed for their benefit. "We have to drag them kicking and screaming," complained one GM executive, noting that qualified women often decline promotions 3 or 4 times before accepting. At IBM and Microsoft, similar patterns emerged, with women turning down management roles at twice the rate of their male counterparts. Many wives quit promising careers, claiming work creates unbearable stress, and convince their husbands to downsize so they can rededicate themselves to family life. This pattern appears particularly prevalent among women in their 30s and 40s, often coinciding with peak career advancement opportunities. Corporate surveys reveal that 40% of women who left six-figure positions cited family obligations as their primary reason, though deeper interviews often revealed anxiety about increased responsibility. Dr. Ruth Moulton's groundbreaking research identified a have-another-child syndrome, where talented women become pregnant to avoid career anxiety. She documented 20 patients who used compulsive child rearing to escape the outside world, often conceiving third or fourth children just as they became freer to pursue outside work. Her follow-up studies showed this pattern was especially common among women with advanced degrees and strong academic backgrounds. One patient, a former medical resident, had 4 children in 6 years, each pregnancy coinciding with major career advancement opportunities. Middle-class women particularly perpetuate the myth that someone else will care for them, a mindset that crosses geographical and cultural boundaries. At an Atlanta dinner party, Dowling encountered a revealing scene among attractive, polished wives in their 30s married to successful men. Despite expressing deep frustration with their eventless lives, their approach to work remained surprisingly lethargic. When considering careers, they universally balked at starting at entry-level positions. One woman wanted immediate top management without pursuing an MBA, preferring a little course to make her look smart. Similar attitudes surfaced in focus groups across major cities, revealing a persistent aversion to the traditional career-building process. The displaced homemaker phenomenon directly stems from women's dependency confusion, creating an emotionally disabled class of 25 million women, widowed or divorced, with no skills to support themselves. These women believed society would reward them for keeping home fires burning, only to find themselves vulnerable when relationships ended. Statistics from a Maryland center painted a stark picture. Only 17% received any income from former husbands, with one-third living in poverty. The psychological impact has been severe, with depression among women surging alarmingly. Recent studies show a third of women aged 30 to 44 using prescription drugs for mood treatment, a rate that doubles that of working women in the same age group. Support groups report that many of these women struggle not just financially, but with a profound loss of identity, having invested entirely in roles that suddenly disappeared. How does this dependency develop? Ironically, girls begin life developmentally ahead of boys, verbally, perceptually, and cognitively superior by 4 to 6 weeks at birth, with a full year's advantage by first grade. Their early verbal skills are notably stronger, with better language comprehension and expression. They demonstrate superior fine motor skills and show more advanced social awareness. Yet by ages 3 or 4, they're already serving others, taking on caretaking roles, and learning to put others' needs before their own. The foundation for independence is established before age 6 through critical experiences of autonomy and risk-taking. However, girls are prevented from crucial emotional development because their path is made too easy. They're overprotected, overhelped, and taught that being good ensures continued support. Parents and caregivers often rush to solve problems that girls could handle themselves, from tying shoes to resolving peer conflicts. While dependency is encouraged in girls as charming and sweet, boys are actively discouraged from these same behaviors as sissy-ish or weak, creating a sharp gender divide in emotional development. Dependency training begins at birth through subtle but persistent differences in treatment. Female babies, despite being sturdier developmentally, are handled less vigorously than boys and perceived as more fragile. Parents interpret identical crying differently, as fear in girls but anger in boys, and respond more quickly to comfort daughters. Studies show that mothers speak more soothingly to infant girls and use more emotion-based language. While mothers decrease contact with irritable sons, encouraging them to self-soothe, they increase it with irritable daughters, teaching girls that help comes instantly when they cry. This creates a devastating cycle of learned helplessness. Girls don't learn emotional self-regulation or develop confidence in their problem-solving abilities. Parents become increasingly anxious about their daughter's safety, monitoring their activities more closely than sons. This heightened anxiety communicates to girls that they shouldn't trust their own judgment or take risks. Without experiencing controlled doses of fear and challenge, like climbing trees, exploring independently, or resolving conflicts, girls never learn to master these emotions or develop resilience. By age 6, the pattern is firmly set. Girls who remain passive and dependent show declining IQs and decreased problem-solving abilities, while independent, assertive children show intellectual growth and better emotional regulation. Adolescence brings a unique developmental crisis for girls, marking a dramatic shift in social expectations. Before 12 or 13, girls are relatively free to behave as they wish, playing sports, excelling in math and science, or leading groups. But with puberty, the trapdoor swings shut, as specific feminine behaviors are expected and enforced by both peers and adults. Academic achievement becomes secondary to social success. Suddenly, she's rewarded for success with boys rather than personal achievements. Athletic girls may be discouraged from sports, assertive girls labeled as bossy, and intellectual interests dismissed as unfeminine. The message comes through loud and clear across all aspects of life. Don't compete with men, please the boys, get along. This transformation often results in a marked decrease in self-confidence and ambition just when girls should be developing stronger identities. Family dynamics profoundly shape a girl's development. In families of accomplished women, a pattern emerges. An elusive mother who took a backseat to her husband, creating what daughters describe as a wispy, evanescent quality, a vague presence they can't quite grasp. These mothers, having abandoned their own development, become defined by their husbands. The daughter often bonds with her father instead, feeling special when he tells her how she reminds him of himself. But the father's betrayal comes when his daughter attempts independence. Frequently, the father will encourage his daughter until he becomes afraid of her knowing more than he does, observes Ruth Moulton. Young women who begin to succeed intellectually or creatively suddenly find paternal support withdrawn, experienced as profound betrayal. While daughters often blame their overbearing fathers for their problems, mothers contribute equally to women's difficulty in achieving independence. The elusive mother sins by omission, failing to support her daughter's autonomy while remaining as dependent on her daughter as she is on her husband. Rather than supporting independence, they undercut it with excessive concern, restricting activities so daughters don't overdo, pushing for safe choices, and tightening restrictions. The consequences manifest in adult women's behavior. Research shows women are unwilling to recognize other female leaders. In mixed groups, both men and women perceive men as leaders, even when women occupy leadership positions. Women struggle with competition, experiencing drops in confidence unless receiving constant positive feedback. They feel inadequate in situations requiring improvisation, obsessing over doing the right thing even during emergencies. Most alarmingly, women are less likely than men to fulfill their intellectual potential, with declining total intelligence scores the longer they're away from school. Studies suggest dependent personality traits may actually impair intellectual functioning, as reliance on outside cues hampers internal analytical processes. Women's view of marriage remains largely unchanged. Many still see it as a fortress protecting them from responsibility. In Husbands and Wives, Pietropinto and Seminier found women prioritizing security over companionship or sex, regardless of educational background. One postgraduate educated homemaker chose her husband because I was the center of his life and he could be a good provider. The psychological concept of fusion describes relationships where partners surrender individual identity for a merged one. This regressive impulse originates in childhood. Adults who try to fuse with mates are acting like toddlers, yearning to recapture the primitive, empathetic exchange between infant and mother. In fused marriages, both partners remain at a psychologically infantile level, becoming two gray figures locked in a repetitious, deathly dance. Madeline Borov's story exemplifies blind devotion, a competent-appearing woman who supported her unstable husband, Manny, for 22 years. After Manny lost his advertising job, they moved to Connecticut, where he claimed to work on a novel while she supplemented their unemployment benefits. When benefits ran out, they began collecting welfare. Later, Madeline fraudulently applied for Massachusetts welfare too, using their old apartment address. This deception eventually led to jail sentences for both. Her blind devotion masked her own dependency needs. She feared being alone more than facing legal consequences. The good woman who devotes her life to keeping her husband straight and children protected isn't a saint, but a clinger who fears independence. Psychologically, she uses marriage in the service of regression, hoping to return to an earlier, safer time. The good girl syndrome has consequences beyond marriage. One study found 88% of non-orgasmic women described themselves as having been good girls in childhood, compared to only 30% of orgasmic women, suggesting psychological independence correlates with sexual fulfillment. Psychologist Matina Horner's groundbreaking research in the late 1960s identified women's fear of success, the tendency for capable, achievement-oriented women to become anxious about succeeding. Using projective story completion tests at the University of Michigan, Horner asked students to write stories about Anne, or John for male students, finding herself at the top of her medical school class. The results revealed stark gender differences. 90% of men saw success as desirable and believed it would help them attract women, while 65% of women found success disturbing or terrifying, primarily because they believed professional achievement would jeopardize their relationships with men. The female respondents portrayed Anne as unhappy, aggressively ambitious, or socially rejected. An acne-faced bookworm met with a chorus of groans from classmates when she topped the rankings. One student's response was particularly violent, describing Anne being beaten and maimed for life by disgusted classmates after expressing joy at her success. Women who suppress their ambitions to avoid gender panic pay a steep emotional price. Rather than embracing their capabilities, they deliberately lower their aspirations to maintain a conventionally feminine image, resulting in aggression, bitterness, and confusion. Success-anxious women perform below their abilities in competitive situations, downgrade their accomplishments, and ultimately sabotage their futures without realizing their lives are ruled by gender panic. Adrienne exemplifies the woman who lowers her ambitions at 20 only to face regret at 40. Despite her intelligence and college success, she settled for being a wife who happens to work in corporate PR rather than pursuing graduate school or the Foreign Service as once planned. At 38, she realizes she spent years in a comfortable but unfulfilling job that doesn't even pay enough to support herself independently. Like many women, she chose comfort over stimulation, security over growth, until finding herself dissatisfied with the emptiness of her comfortable life. Women are exhausting themselves trying to manage both careers and domestic responsibilities simultaneously. National surveys reveal widespread fatigue among working wives who put in 80 to 100-hour weeks when housework is included. The typical working mother spends 40 hours at her job, then faces another 30-40 hours of household management, childcare, and domestic tasks. This second shift creates a punishing schedule that leaves little time for rest or personal pursuits. Despite women's entrance into the workforce, most husbands remain unwilling to share household duties. Three major advertising agencies confirmed this reality. Over 75% of men surveyed considered cooking and bathroom cleaning to be their wives' responsibility regardless of employment status. Even more telling, when asked about childcare responsibilities, 82% of men viewed these as primarily maternal duties. The problem isn't just men's resistance. Women themselves often cling to domestic roles. A national survey found employed women rated housework as more personally satisfying than their outside work, despite the physical and emotional toll. This contradiction appears even among successful, high-earning women who unconsciously protect their domestic territory, becoming anxious when husbands attempt to take over traditionally feminine tasks. Professional women reported feeling guilty when not maintaining the same domestic standards as their stay-at-home mothers, despite working full-time jobs. Even high-earning couples like Evelyn and Richard Melton, with combined income over $100,000, maintain traditional divisions of labor. Despite her successful modeling career bringing in $60,000 annually, Evelyn handles all domestic responsibilities, including meal planning, grocery shopping, cleaning, laundry, and social calendar management, while Richard devotes his non-work hours entirely to his passionate interest in photography. When she complains about exhaustion from managing everything, he simply says, "You don't have to," failing to understand that someone must handle these essential tasks. Their pattern reflects a broader trend, where even financially successful women shoulder disproportionate domestic burdens. Beneath this conflict lies Evelyn's own crisis. She lacks equivalent passion in her life and feels jealous of Richard's darkroom time. Though once content with her enviable homemaker career combination, she now feels pressure to find something more demanding and gratifying as women's standards have evolved. Her friends pursue advanced degrees, start businesses, and take on leadership roles, while she remains trapped in domestic routines. Yet she clings to domestic overwork because she fears committing to something new, using Richard as an excuse for her own inability to make changes. This self-imposed barrier prevents her from exploring new directions, whether creative pursuits, education, or career advancement. Like many women, she finds it easier to blame external circumstances than confront her own resistance to change. Resolving the conflict between dependence and independence requires systematic working through, not just vague awareness. The conflict between wanting freedom and craving protection is particularly insidious because it carries a hidden gain. It allows us to stay exactly where we are. With these opposing wishes driving us, we remain in limbo, which offers the advantage of neither hot nor cold, neither exciting nor dead. Women who are essentially divided can have whole areas of their personalities eclipsed because they use so much energy suppressing one side of their basic conflict. This constitutes a loss of energy that might otherwise be used constructively. The energy leak manifests as indecisiveness and inertia, vacillating endlessly between options, clouding issues, and procrastinating. Even simple tasks require inordinate effort. Getting past conflict requires more than band-aid fixes. It means attacking root causes. This happens through scrupulous self-attention, examining motives, attitudes, and thought patterns. When inconsistencies appear, they must be followed rather than dismissed. These quirks often reflect major personality divisions. Simone de Beauvoir's relationship with Jean-Paul Sartre initially exemplified dependency, with her admiring his superiority and experiencing him as providing the sort of absolute, unfailing security that I had once had from my parents or from God. After 18 months of blissful fusion, she recognized she was abdicating her potential, becoming a mere parasite. To break free, she took a teaching job in Marseille, away from Sartre and Paris. There, she embarked on solitary, rigorous hikes, walking up to 25 miles daily, exploring mountains and valleys, hitchhiking, and facing dangers alone. Through these physical challenges, she metaphorically reclaimed her soul, writing later, "I knew that I could now rely on myself." The ultimate goal is emotional spontaneity, an inner liveliness stemming from the conviction, "I am the first force in my life." Women who have sprung free possess emotional mobility, able to move toward satisfaction and away from what doesn't fulfill them. They're free to succeed without fear of failure, with confidence derived from realistic evaluation of both limits and abilities. Jean Auel exemplifies this freedom, quitting her job at 40 to write a novel despite having 5 children. After extensive research and rewriting, her first book became a bestseller. She took responsibility for shaping her own life rather than letting external events determine it. Freedom and independence can't be wrested from others, but must develop from within. The woman who believes in herself doesn't need empty dreams beyond her capabilities, nor does she waver at tasks for which she's prepared. Realistic, well-grounded, and self-loving, she is free to love others because she first loves herself.